Today's daf in Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Tes. Now, if you have a good long memory, you may remember that yesterday we had the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael. And they were arguing about when the Torah says Metav Sadehu, Metav Karmo, does that mean who being he and he being the one who damaged, which is Rabbi Akiva's Sfarah, the one who damaged gives the best of what he's got. Whereas Rabbi Yishmael says, no, who is he who was damaged? And therefore, it's a reference to the highest level of property that the Nizik has. But the Mazik can always say, I'm not giving this loser more than he's got. If he got along until now with this crummy level of land on his farm, he'll get along with it now too when I'm paying him. So now the question is, what is the basis of this machlokas between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva? My time, today, the Gemara on the fourth line, my time that Rabbi Yishmael, where does Rabbi Yishmael come off saying that it means the best property of the Nizik? Well, says Rabbi Yishmael, read the pasuk and you'll see what I'm saying. How does the whole thing begin? It begins with the words of Ubir b'stei acher, right? V'shilachet b'yiro ubir b'stei acher. You let your animal loose, and it went around eating up in someone else's field. The word field, therefore, means, by definition, someone else's field. Now, when the Torah then concludes by saying, the best field, well, that's Gzeira Shavah. The first field was the field of the Nizik, who's being eaten. The second field is the same as the first field. Pay metav sadehu of the person whose field was being eaten. It works out perfectly. Nemar sade lamata, it says sade lamata, meaning at the end of the pasuk, metav sadehu yishalem. V'nemar sade lamala, at the beginning of the pasuk, when it says ubir b'sade acher. Just like the sade that was talking about at the beginning of the pasuk that was defining the damage. Obviously, was referring to the Nizik, he's the one who was damaged. Afsadeh Amura Lamata is a reference to the person who was damaged. And therefore, you pay only the most that the damaged individual, the damagee, the Nizik. Whereas Rabbi Akiva Sava, look man, you know how to read? Metav Sadehu Yishalem. Who's Metav Sadehu? The Yishalem, for heaven's sakes, the guy who's paying. Mr. Payer should pay the best of his sada. I don't take off with this supposed gzera shava to run against the actual meaning of the pasuk. And the truth is, says the Gemara, of course Rabbi Yishmael does not mean to ignore the simple meaning of the pasuk either. We can just ignore what it says. Rabbi Yishmael will say, I'm not actually contradicting the simple meaning of the pasuk. The simple meaning of the pasuk comes into play in certain circumstances. So I say, we have both the gzera shava, which comes to teach me a particular circumstances, and then we have the simple meaning of the pasuk. So look, I told you already where the gzera shava is used. The mazik has got very much better property, but he also has a similar level property. He could play with a similar level property, right? So that's because of the Gzera Shava. But the simple meaning of the Pusik also is very important. Let's imagine a case where the Mazik has two levels of property. One of them is Idit, the very highest quality, and one of them is Ziburit. Now, please just remember, this is not our sugya, but I'm sure that it will trouble you. How can a person have two levels of property if these properties are defined relative to each other? How can you have Idit and Ziburit if there's what would make it Idit with Ziburit only because there's nothing in between? But if these properties are defined by some, what if they're defined by some general description of properties? That's called Bida Olam Shaimina, that in order to define what properties are, we give them objective meanings. So that means this person has his property, which would be in the world, would be Idit. So would it be possible for a person to have Beinonit and Ziburit only? Only if, of course, Beinonit and Ziburit are defined objectively. But if Beinonit and Ziburit are defined Bididei Kashaimina, I know that Gavi's driving, but I hope afterwards he'll remember to put this in, that bididei kashaminan. So then it seems like it's impossible. You can't have a beninis and a ziburis. You can only have an edict viziburis. So take that into consideration because it's a complicating factor. Again, we're not learning Baba Kama or Baba Basra here, so we're not going to go into these details. But just in case this is confusing, recognize that there are times when we talk about bididei or bididei alma. So let's imagine a case where a guy has two levels, very high quality, which is beyond the level of the value that the nizik has. But he also has very low quality, which is beneath the level of the best property that the nizik has. Now, what do you do there? Says Rabbi Yishmael, in the event that I would be limited by the gezeirah shavah, I would have been forced to conclude, well, you can't make a guy pay more than the Torah said he should pay, and the Torah only said he should pay up to the highest quality land of the nizik. So I guess he's going to get away with paying with his worst land here, even though it's not worth as much as the best land of the nizik. Ah, therefore, says Rabbi Shmuel, that's why the Torah put it this way. Meitav sadeo yishalem, meaning of mi shemishalem. And therefore, if there's an alternative of paying less than or more than quality of the nizik, there the pasuk is coming to tell me, in such a case, pay more than. So it's not Rabbi Akiva. It's not as if I'm just ignoring things here. Of course, I'm taking both into consideration, the gzeirah shavah and the simple meaning. So that would mean, let's just see it inside, ahani gzeirah shavah, as I pointed out before, but also ahani kra, because the itli lamazik only idit viziburit. And his ziburit is not up to par, lo shavya ki idit nizik, and his idit is better, nonetheless, he's got to pay above what it is that the nizik has, and he would be mishalem in ameta. Now, those words of Rabbi Akiva, how exactly do we understand? So when Rabbi Akiva comes along and says, lo ba'akatuv, ela ligbot l'nizik min ha'idit, so what he's trying to say now that we understand Rabbi Yishmael in this fashion is that the Torah did not come along to make life easier for the mazik. The Torah came along to make life tough for a mazik and to make him pay from the best. And if that's the case, for sure, if he damaged the hezek, if we're talking about hegdish, for sure you're going to have to pay min han meta, right? Kavachom la hegdish. You just explain those words of kavachom la hegdish. Let me get the case straight, please. Who damaged who? What's the meaning of kavakom lahekdash? That what? That my shor, I'm just a regular guy. So not ketur didan to the shor of hekdash. You're saying if I have to pay damages to hekdash and I don't have cash, for sure I'm going to have to pay with the best property I own, right? That's what it sounds like he's saying, except for one minor problem. If a regular guy damages hekdash, he doesn't pay a single solitary cent. Because the Torah introduces the parsha of Nezikin with shor ish et shorei ehu. When a person damages another person's shor, that means that the entire description of Nezikin in the Torah, at least the way the Yerushalmi understands it, as Tosfos explains, is referring to the social contract. The social contract is between citizens. As far as what the din would be, if somebody causes hezek to hegdish, that's a totally different issue. We have all kinds of special concepts when it comes to hegdish, which include me'ila for a person who accidentally takes something from hegdish, nena from hegdish. However, when it comes to damaging hegdish, there are no halakhas because there's no interrelationship. There's no social contract when it comes to hegdish. And therefore, the Torah potters you from payment if you damage hegdash. So what would Rabbi Akiva mean that it's a kal v'chomer that you'd pay hegdash from the very best? I don't pay hegdash at all. So what is he referring to? Unless maybe the idea is like this. If somebody says, I promise to pay $100 to the Bedek HaBayit, and I don't have any cash, and the gizbar is coming to collect from my sadot. So what you're saying is kal v'chomer that the gizbar should for sure come and take from Edis. Does that make sense? A regular Balkov wouldn't take from Idis. If we're talking about Nazikin, you could take Kal V'chomer. But if we're not talking about Nazikin, we're talking about somebody who owes money to Agdash. So what kind of Kal V'chomer? How can you make a Kal V'chomer if I'm paying Agdash? I pay more than I would have had to pay if it wasn't Agdash. It doesn't make any sense. So then if I were a normal Balkov, what would I be paying? I would have been paying only Beninus. So what does Rabbi Akiva mean? Unless, maybe, v'chitema, kasova Rabbi Akiva balchov shokel be'idis kinezikin? I mean, maybe, is it possible that Rabbi Akiva actually holds that a balchov also pays in idis? But let's even say that he does. It still doesn't make any sense. How could it possibly be a kal v'chomer? Can you explain to me? Let me show you why it's not a kal v'chomer. It's because I could always say, what kind of kal v'chomer is that? Ikel mifrach mala balchov, shekein yipei kocho b'nezikin. A normal balchov, who's not dealing with hekdash, has more power when it comes to nezek, because he can collect. But hekdash is a weakling. Hekdash cannot collect for damages caused to hekdash. In which case, maybe they're also a weakling in collecting from people that owe them money in general, like the Balchov. So how can you make a Kal V'chomer LeHegdash? This doesn't make sense. Tomra BeHegdash Kein Hura Kocho BeNezakin. So, no, this doesn't work. Okay, let me go back to what we said before. Yes, we are talking about that a regular Shmo's Shor damaged a Shor of Hegdash. And what was your problem? So then you don't pay Hegdash at all? Wrong. Rabbi Akiva holds like the sheet of Reb Shimon ben Menasya. And Reb Shimon ben Menasya learns out from Re'ehu the exact opposite of what everybody else learns out from Re'ehu. Everybody learns from Re'ehu that if it's not Re'ehu, you don't pay at all. Reb Shimon ben Menasya learns out from Re'ehu these special dinim that if someone's shor had never damaged before, he gets away with paying only chatzi nezek. That's called Tam Meshalim Chatzi Nezek. That is only true where it's Re'ehu. But if you damage Hegdash, you can't get away with paying Chatzi Nezek, even if it's the first time. You're going to have to pay through the nose, and it's going to be Nezek Sholem. That's what Re'ehu is coming to tell me. So why does it specify Re'ehu as general? Because it wants you to know that if Hegdash damages you, they don't pay a penny. But if you damage Hegdash, you pay through the nose, and you even pay Nezek Shalem on a tam. That's what it's coming to teach me. So I see that inside. The Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Menasya Omer, Shor shel Hegdash Nogach l'Shor shel Hedyot is totally potter. But the other way around, a Hedyot Shenogach shel Hegdash, over there you pay Bein Tam Bein Muad Mishalem Nezek Shalem. And therefore, comes on Rabbi Akiva to say, Kal v'chomer l'Hegdash mi'ata. That's the point. If Hegdash, you'd have to pay, even as a Sholem. So then, obviously, you're going to have to pay from Idit, because you pay also the best to non-Hegdash. Kosher k'ein to Hegdash, you pay the best. Now, that's a very fascinating way of understanding Rabbi Akiva. But it creates a problem. Because if the point of Rabbi Akiva is Kal V'chomer LeHegdash Mi'ata, how do we know that that's not the whole point of Rabbi Akiva? In other words, maybe Rabbi Akiva wasn't even arguing on Rabbi Shmuel. Maybe Rabbi Akiva was only discussing one element with Rabbi Shmuel, not what the meaning of Idis and Meitav is, L'kabe Nez, Nizik and Mazik, but rather, he was only arguing about this Reb Shimon ben Menasya din. And he was saying, well, I got news for you, Rabbi Shmuel. If you have to pay when you damage a hedyot, kal v'chomer you're going to have to pay me idis, whatever the idis is. I'm not arguing with you about what the idis is. But for sure, when you damage hegdash, you're going to have to pay. And Rabbi Shmuel says, no. When you damage hegdash, you don't pay at all, because he doesn't know the Reb Shimon ben Menasya. How do we know that that wasn't the entire thrust of what Rabbi Akiva was saying? How are we so certain that Rabbi Akiva was arguing with Rabbi Shmuel about the definition of Meitav being Shomazik. Therefore, as the Gemara, Ihachi, wait, so now that you're telling me that that's what the meaning of Rabbi Akiva's statement is, so Mimai to be Edis the Nizik is Yiburis to Mazik Plige, what makes you so sure that the real Machlokas between them is about that particular case where the Nizik has only property whose best is worth less or the same as the Zibur to the Mazik? Maybe they're not even discussing that. Maybe everybody agrees to Rabbi Yishmael. Dilma de Kuleyama ben Nizik Shaiminan. The only machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael were those last cutting words. Kava chomer la'agdash miyata. That's what I'm pointing out to you. So, haka bepluktu Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh v'rabbanukam miflege. Rabbi Akiva says, yep. It's a kava chomer because I hold the Rabbi Shimon ben Manasseh and you pay more to Hegdash, not zero to Hegdash. Whereas Rabbi Yishmael says, no, nonsense. You don't pay to Hegdash at all. And therefore, I argue on you. So have a look at Rabbanim, but we're not discussing Nizik and Mazik. Well, says the Gemara, that's crazy. If that's all that the Machlokas was, what did you gain by having that whole introduction? Omar Rabbi Akiva, lo ba hakatuv ela ligvot. What is that? That's irrelevant. All Rabbi Akiva needed to say was, kavachor mele hegdash. The point that Rabbi Akiva is clearly making is, this is coming to tell me not a kula like you, Rabbi Yishmael. It's coming to tell me a chumra, that you got to pay more. And if it's coming to tell me a chumra, now I can make a kavachomer on a chumra, that hegdash should be more chamur. That's the point. So obviously he's arguing about the essential point, lo ba'akatuv, not to mention the fact that he's making a kavachomer lehegdash. How can you make a kavachomer if you just stated a halacha that's a kula and not a chumra? That's silly. So he must be saying, look, this is a chumra. And since I hold like Rosh Hashanah Menasya, by the way, it also implies that it would mean that you would pay hegdash from the Beitav. Of course, I argue on you on your fundamental statement of only paying Meitav of the Nizik. Furthermore, the Amar Rav Ashi, there's a Braita that says Beferish, where Rabbi Akiva says these words, Tanya Behedya, Meitav Sadehu, Meitav Karmo Yishalem, this means Meitav Sadehu Shal Nizik, who Meitav Karmo Shal Nizik, Divi Rabbi Yishmael, and here's the critical words, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Meitav Sadehu Shal Mazik, Umeitav Karmo Shomazik. So let's cut the shtick over here. We know there's this machlokas. There's another machlokas as well, but Nogea Hegdash. But now let's not confuse the meaning of the Mishnah. Ravina says, okay, but look, what you've ended up saying is that the Mishnah that claims that it is a tikkun ha'olam for the person, the mazik, to be paying from Meitav, it's only a tikkun olam according to Rabbi Yishmael. Because according to Rabbi Akiva, it's a d'oraisa. And that means that the Mishnah doesn't make sense according to Rabbi Akiva. I find that hard to swallow. I mean, it's kulam aliba to Rabbi Akiva, isn't it? Why would we have a Mishnah that is taking for granted Rabbi Shmuel against Rabbi Akiva? Therefore, says Ravina, I don't believe that. I believe that our Mishnah could work out perfectly well, aliba to Rabbi Akiva, and nonetheless, even though he says, midiyoraita b'damazik shamina, and you ask me, so where do you come off using the words mipnei tikkun olam, if it's a diraisa? Ah, but Rabbi Shimon was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Shimon says that we are dorish taima dekra, right? Dorish taima dekra means, if the Torah tells me something, then I need to derive from it principles, okay? So what's the meaning? What am I supposed to understand lies behind this halacha? Comes along Rabbi Shimon to say, why do you think that the Torah insisted that when it comes to paying nezek, you have to pay from the very best of your property? And it didn't insist that that's the case in other cases. Why? I'll tell you why. Mipnei tikkun olam. God's tikkun olam. Not the chachomim's tikkun olam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu kevayachol wanted to make a point. If you cause damage, you may end up losing the very best that you have. That's the point. That's all that it means. So therefore, it's Rabbi Shimon the Dorish, the Kaim, the Kra, and he's saying, Ma tam koma? What is the basis of the Torah telling me ma tam hanizakin shamim lam beidut bipnei tikun ha'olam? And I'll show you, this is for real, man. This is not Rabbi Shimon giving his Reform Rabbi's discussion of the week. This is a braita. You're the braita, Titania. Amar Rabbi Shimon, bipnei ma amru hanizakin shamim lam beidut. Because it is no good gazlanim, these no good chamsanim who may take property from you, even if they pay for it, they're still chamsanim. It's in order that a person should think to himself, Kedei Sheyomar Adam, crime doesn't pay. So the person has to think to himself, Lama ani gozel, lama ani chomes. You know what might happen? And they're going to take the best of what I've got. I can end up being worse off than I was before. And then they'll give me their stuff. Well, it says in the Torah, Metav Sadeo, Metav Karma Yishalem. Oh, gosh, I better actually go legit. See? So we see that Rabbi Shimon actually believes this, that this is the basis of why the Torah said it, and therefore we're calling it a tikkun ha'olam. Meanwhile, I am running out of steam because I'm running out of people. All I've got is static pictures. Maybe if the big N would show his face, who knows? If I could see Richie just for a moment. If Alon maybe would show us something. My gosh. If the Rebbe would show up, imagine the chaos that we would all have over you. There we go. Now. Oh, I'm starting to feel like $1,000,000. I've even got David Solomon. This is incredible. Still don't have a Rebbe. What can you do? We'll have to have words with the Gabbai, and hopefully this will be fixed for tomorrow. But anyway, okay, now I can continue a little bit. So Rabbi Shimon, once he's telling you his analysis of what God was thinking, he's going to tell us what was the reason that the Torah teaches us that if you're collecting from a balchov, it's only bebeinonit. How come it's only bebeinonit? Bipnei ma amru balchov bebeinonit. I'll tell you why. It makes a lot of sense. These sneaky humans, says God to himself. What a bunch of no-goodniks. A guy sees another person who's got this beautiful house, and he says, I want to buy your house. The guy refuses. I'm not interested in selling my house. So this guy comes up with a brilliant idea. I'm going to offer this man a big loan for him to get into a real estate project, which undoubtedly he'll default on. I'm going to come and I'm going to collect his beautiful house. Ha ha. So he figures out a way to get that house. Therefore, says the Torah, well, you're never going to be able to collect his nicest stuff anyway. He can give you beinonis. It ain't worth it. And so that should stop the problem of all of these phony bank mortgages. So, let me go ahead and lend him money. Wait, so if you're worried about that, why didn't God say to pay only the worst? Because, I mean, maybe I have my eye on his middle house. No. The reason we can't do Ziburit also makes sense. Because Im Kein Atanoel Delet Bifnei Lovin. Remember that we're always needing to live with a very careful balance. Do we need to have venture capitalists available? Yes, we do. And if a venture capitalist can only collect from the Ziburis, will he be likely to lend? Less likely. So therefore, we need to balance it. Let him collect from Beinonis so that he won't say, ah, forget it, I got no kayach to deal with this crummy level real estate. But at the same time, let us also make certain that he can't put his eyes on the very best of the other person's property, which is more likely. Okay, that explains the Balchov. Now, how about explaining the ketubah? Continues Rabbi Shimon. Well, that's because yoter mimasha ish rotze lisa, haisha rotze linase. And that to the misfortune of women, they actually like to get married to men. And therefore, why should we make a takana because of linol delet bifnei lovim? You're not going to be linol delet bifnei chatanim who want to get married. These crazy girls actually want to get married. So therefore, we don't have to make this takana to allow the collection from the very best. And there's another reason. The other reason is that a woman can be divorced whether she wants to or not. So isha yotza liritzona v'shalo liritzona. But an ish can only be motzia liritzono, and he can't be forced into giving a get. What? What does that have to do with anything? My dovar acher, I said, how exactly does that impact anything? I don't get it. No, I'll tell you. Because maybe you're thinking like this, that in the same way that if, ki eche dechimafikli ihu, if a guy gives a get, and there's no real good reason why to give a get, I decide I don't like you. It's disgusting. So what's the din? The Rabbanan made it difficult for him, and he's got to pay through the nose with the ksuva. So then in a case where a woman initiates the divorce by making things so miserable until he gives her divorce, then we should give a ksuva to him. Therefore, comes along the brayta to say, no. Bottom line is that a woman can be divorced, and she can't prevent her divorce, so therefore we have to give her some level of protection. But a man, if he wants to, he can just not send her that get, make her wait, and not ever be married. He'll move out of the house, and then what? So therefore, he's got plenty of ways to drive her crazy. Why should we give him any kind of financial compensation? Efshe d'mashe la begeta. So if he actually gave her a get, it's because he wants to give her a get. So what do I have to make some level of protection for him? That doesn't make any sense. All right, now, we learned before that ktuvat isha is beziburit. Omer mazuta b'rei d'Rav Nachman. Yeah, but that's only if she's collecting as a almana. Her husband died. So then she's collecting from the heirs. But if he divorced her and she's collecting from him, then she's like any other debt and she collects from Beinonit. What? Says the Gemara. That's crazy. The Mishnah says, Miyatmi, you're collecting from Yatomim. Then what does that have to do with the Ketubah? Anyone who collects from Yatomim can only collect from the Ziburit. So why would we have a special clause? That's the next piece in the Mishnah. So that means that you're making the part about the ketubah completely meaningless. You're saying when it says a woman collects her ketubah from ziburit, it's only talking about where she's collected from yetomim. Anybody collected from yetomim is ziburit. I don't care what we're talking about, because that's the next piece of the Mishnah. That's none. So obviously, if we're talking about a special case of the Ketubat Isha, and it says that she collects from Ziburit, it means where she's not taking from the Yatomim, she's a divorcee, she's collecting from her very much live husband, and therefore, it's saying nonetheless, because of the logic that we mentioned earlier, which is the Tavlamet of Tandu, and Yoter Mimasha Ishrotzalisa, so because of that, we only give her from the Ziburit, when she's collecting directly from the husband. Says Gemara, no, listen, I mean, Marzutra's not crazy. The point is, it might be referring Dafka to the case of Yatme. The only reason that, according to Marzutra, we needed to mention specifically the Ketubat Isha is because Ketubat Isha is a special case. You see, I would have thought, but Salka Daitcha Mina Mishum China, Akilu Rabbanan Gava. In order to give chen, now there's always big machlokas between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Chanan. Rashi learns that chen, it means that we have to make marriage more palatable for women. So even though they're crazy enough to want to marry these men, but they're not totally insane. So if they're not, basically, if they're not given some level of decent protection, they're going to say, men, You can't live without them, but you can't live with them either. And therefore, they're not going to get married. So we want marriage to look good. That's why we have these chinah parties, you know. So this is mishum chinah. This is basically a super chinah party. So by, you might have thought that we should give marriage chen in the eyes of women and allow them to feel, well, at least I'm protected. I'm well protected. Therefore, mishum chinah kilo rabbanan gabar kamashma. Therefore, the Tana had to tell us that even when it comes to ksuva, we won't allow, even for purposes of chen, we won't allow a woman to collect from yitomim. But if she's collecting directly from the guy, she's like any other Baal Chov, and she collects from Beinonis. That's what Mar Zutra holds. That's Rashi's approach. The Rabbeinu Chananel's approach, which Tosfos says here he thinks makes more sense, is Mishum Chinah is the other way around. That actually we want the women to be more likely to be married by men. So now if you have a woman who's now in need of a second marriage, okay, so she's collecting her ketubah. Don't you think that if she were a wealthy landowner, that she might attract a second husband a lot faster? Yes. So therefore, you might have thought that to help a woman get a good husband after going through this divorce or death, that you might think that we were mitakin, that even from yetomim, that she can get a good piece of land because that makes her more attractive. Kamashman, even so, we don't take that away from the yetomim. Those are the two different approaches, Rashi, Rabbeinu Chananel, respectively. Amar Rav, all right, let's take a look in the way the Mishnah is phrased and see whether the Ketuvat Isha is referring to the case that Mar Zutra claims, that it's talking about where you're collecting from Yatomim, or it's the way we always understood it, that you're collecting from a husband who is alive and had given a divorce. Tashma, Rabbi Meir Omer, Ketuvat Isha Bebeinunit. So here Rabbi Meir disagrees. When Rabbi Meir said that the woman collects Beinonit, who is he talking about? Is he talking about when you're collecting the ketuvah from Yetomim that you get Beinonit? What do you mean? You mean that Rabbi Meir disagrees fundamentally with the whole point in the Mishnah? Hadetnan, ein ifray min ichse Yetomim ela min aziburit. Rabbi Meir disagrees with that? We never saw that. Obviously, Rabbi Meir didn't mean that a Almana can collect from Yetomim. He meant that a woman who was divorced can collect from her husband. Mine? Like any other loan. Her husband owed money, he'd have to pay from Beinonit. Your husband owns money for the ketuvah, he has to pay it for Beinonis. And therefore, it makes sense that the Rabbanan hold that you collect from Ziburit in the same case. What the case being a divorcee, not the case of a widow. We're talking about the Grusha, the way we always claim. And that shows that Mar Zutra is totally wrong. No, not necessarily. Rabbi Meir may not mean that. Rabbi Meir is actually talking about a case where it's an Amana collecting from Yetomim. And Rabbi Meir actually buys into this Svara of Ketuvas Isha is different. And you can collect even from Yetomim. Why? Mishum Chinah, which was our Havamina. We said that Mar Zutra said that's why we needed to make that special takana. Fine. So we need that special clause in the Mishnah. Rabbi Meir says, what about it? Forget special clause in the Mishnah. Actually, it happens to be true. The Rabbanan allow a Ketuvat Isha to be collected. Of course, we're talking about Minah Yetomim, because otherwise it's always collected from Beinonit. But even from Yetomim, Beinonit Mishum Chinah. So what's the problem? Works out perfectly well, according to Mar Zutra. Omer Abaya, okay, let me try to solve this once and for all. Let's read the Mishnah, please, together, and you'll see that it really falls apart. Hold my hand, and I'll take you through the Mishnah. Hanizakin shamin lahem be'idit. Balchov bebeinonit. Ketuvat isha beziburit. Now, who are we talking about collecting from, my dear friends? From whom? Collecting from whom? Well, we're talking about collecting Nizikin and Ketuvah and Baal Chov from Yasme. So then, how could that possibly be the case over here? If we're talking about all these things, we're talking from Yetomim, forget about the Ketuvat Isha. All of them are only from Ziburis, like it says in the next clause in the Mishnah. So obviously the three cases are juxtaposed, for God's sake. Nezikin, from him. Loans, from him. Tuvas Isha, from him. They have to be juxtaposed cases. You can't flip the case in the middle. That doesn't make any sense. Omer of Acha by Yaakov, listen. It's a good point, but you don't have to flip the case in the middle. And it still, believe it or not, still adds up, okay? Because what I'm trying to say, I'm trying to bring out to you through a very interesting juxtaposition to bring out the different dinim. Now, you have to imagine a case like this, okay? Daddy comes along, and Daddy gives a guarantee for his half-wit son, not really half-wit, but he thinks he's a half-wit. Anyway, he says, look, my boy, I tell you, if he defaults on the loan, I'll handle it. I'll be his guarantor. My boy, he says to the daughter-in-law, if he doesn't pay you that ketuvah and he acts up, you just come to me and I'll pay you. And if he goes and dies on you, you come to me. I'll take care of the ketuvah. You can trust me. I'm a big, rich fellow. And he also tells the bank, if my son gets into any kind of trouble and his things damage anybody else, you guys just come to me and I'm guaranteeing the payment. So now we're juxtaposing payment of a guarantor. Now, when the guarantor, who is very much alive, is paying the death ksuva of his son, who passed away, to his daughter-in-law, that's when we can talk about collecting a ksuva not from Yesomim, and nonetheless, from Ziburit, because the son is dead. Okay, now, you want to talk about when we got the three? That's how we have the three. And this is what it's coming to tell me. Kegon shenase arev leniske beno, and the balchov beno, l'ktuvat kalato. So this guy's made himself a guarantor for all three types of payments. Now, his son goes ahead and dies, leaving unpaid the damages that he caused, the loans that he took, and the ktuva of the woman that he cannot afford to pay from his estate. So now we're coming to collect from daddy, Mr. Guarantor. So therefore, the Mishnah is coming to tell me what kind of land you have a right to take from daddy, the guarantor. So therefore, the Mishnah is coming to tell me, when it comes to the Nezikin, they take the same level of land that they would have taken from his deceased son. When it comes to a loan, same level of land they would have taken from the deceased son. But the ksuva is different. The ksuva is actually coming only from, even though it's coming from the guarantor, it's coming only from Ziburis. That's the Chiddush of the Mishnah, and that's true according to everybody. That's even true according to the way Marzurcha was coming to explain. And now let me explain to you why. Each one of these cases is paid by the guarantor according to what the din would have been for the son. Okay? So now, Haikidine Vahaikidine. There's something different about the ksuva. Let's think about this. The Nezikin and the Balchov were over there. The son, if the son would have been alive, so then they would have been able to collect that while the son was alive, right? And he guaranteed whatever they could collect from while the son was alive. So then he has to pay whatever the son would have paid if the son had property. So then we do the same thing to the father, who's in this case the guarantor. So So when he is now being collected from, he pays whatever the son would have paid if the son were alive. But if the son were alive, he wouldn't be dead. Wow. And if he wouldn't be dead, he wouldn't owe this ksuva. So therefore, a guarantor could never be a guarantor of payment of what the son would pay while the son was alive, unless the son had divorced the wife and died. But that's not what we're talking about over here. So the ktuvat isha, which anyway is only payable where the son died. So now who are we going to collect it from over here if it wouldn't have been for the guarantor? Oh, we would have had to collect it from Yetomim. That's what Marzutra is saying. Since you would have only collected it from Yitomim, therefore, when you're collecting it from the juxtaposed cases of the guarantor, you can only collect it as if it was being collected from Yitomim. And since you would have only been able to collect Ziburit, you can only collect, voila, from the guarantor as if it was the Yitomim. And that explains why it is that the Ketuvah Tisha would be, in this case, Biziburit, even though it's juxtaposed, and even though Marzutra says it only applies to cases where you're collecting from Yitomim. That was pretty good, huh? Okay, so now we've got a way to juxtapose the cases. You would have thought that the big N would have smiled at this because it would be right up the kind of people he's dealing with. But I guess he doesn't see it as being that relevant. So in any event, we got a little bit of a smile. So tomorrow we're going to have to see how exactly one makes himself a guarantor in these cases, because usually, you'll recall, we had this back from Ksuvas, when somebody guarantees payment of a Ksuva, we say, that's another good Samaritan. He figures, what are they losing? You know, they want to get married. She doesn't try. Don't worry, honey. You can trust me. I'll take it. Like he means it. Like heck he means it. So normally, the Areva Viktuva is really not a binding situation. That the Gemara is going to have to figure out. How did Daddy get binded over here when it was for Viktuva?